LSU's baseball contingent inches closer and closer to what they hope will be a regional bid. Game two of a pivotal series tonight. Softball takes center stage as both LSU and the Ragin' Cajuns seek to survive and advance as regional tournament play begins. Tigers struggling. Brooks Koepka not struggling. Who in the Sam Hill is going to win the Preakness? NBA talk and much more. Oh, it's all coming your way. What day is it? That's right, baby. Friday, May 17th, 2019.
There's a 6 second change differential. Step backs up the midcourt. Dribbles down the lane. Throws to Draymond. Layup is up and good! It's good! 12.3 to go! Warriors 114, Portland 111.
And the pitch to Profar. He hits it deep to right field. Going back is Castellanos, and it is gone! A grand slam for Jurickson Profar. First pitch for Jurickson Profar. As we were talking about the struggles and get it going.
First grand slam for the A's. First for Profar.
Here's the 1-2 to Duplantis. This time high and deep to right field. Williams going to give chase, but he will just admire it. Solo shot for Antoine Duplantis to lead off the bottom of the seventh inning. Home run number 11. It's 7-1 Tigers.
Oh, welcome. Happy Friday to you and yours. It was a great Thursday night if you're an LSU baseball fan as they get great pitching from Eric Walker. They go yard. They rally with a four-run, two-out inning, and they take care of business against Auburn in game number one. Game number two coming up tonight. First pitch at 7 o'clock at the box. Pre-game show 6:30 right here on 103.7 The Game. 1 hour earlier, a first pitch for the struggling UL Ragin' Cajuns, whose longtime winning streak over the UL Monroe Warhawks came to a disappointing end last night. Game two for the fourth in the West Ragin' Cajuns in the Sun Belt Conference is a 6 p.m. start. Coming up to start off things this afternoon at 3:30, the best-kept secret in softball, 50-4, the Ragin' Cajuns will begin the Oxford Regional with a 3:30 first pitch in the circle against Southeast Missouri. And then on the other flip side, at Tiger Park in Baton Rouge, LSU will get their Baton Rouge Regional underway in game two of the series that LSU will take on Monmouth at 4:30 right here, right now. So a lot of baseball and softball action going on. Let me tell you about what we have in store for you and yours today. Ben McDonald will join us at around 2:32 this afternoon. We'll recap game one, take a look ahead at game number two, and get a gist of where things are right here, right now for LSU baseball as far as, one, SEC tournament play. What do they have to do there? Two, how close are they or how far are they away from securing a top 16 seed, which would mean they would host a regional in Baton Rouge. So we'll talk with Ben about that. In hour number two, we always start things off with our Hot Topic segment as producer extraordinaire Clint Domain will take care of business with that. Michael Bakechak will join us from Bakechak Racing. The Preakness needs a star. Neither the winner or the disqualified winner of the Kentucky Derby is racing in the Preakness. In fact, the first top four finishers are not racing in this race. They've got 9 horses in the field that didn't run in the Kentucky Derby out of 13 horses. Michael Bakechak will join us, and he'll give us his thoughts on what to anticipate, what to expect, and who's going to cross the finish line. We'll be looking forward to that. And then George Becknell will join me, And we'll talk a lot of NBA hoops along the way. Speaking of NBA hoops, report coming out from Jackie McMullen. Jackie McMullen, who with Sports Illustrated is reporting that Gail Benson, the owner of the New Orleans Pelicans, says that through channels, that Gail Benson has basically told David Griffin, Anthony Davis to the Lakers, over my dead body. How about that? How about that? Of course, Davis has requested a trade ahead of the February deadline back when. He's still with the Pels, so we shall see. What do you get for a guy that averages 25.9 points, 12 rebounds, and about 3.9 block shots a game? You better get two starters out of the deal and a draft pick. That's my figuration on this thing. Is that really a word, figuration? Configuration on this deal. But anyway, much, much more to come on that. It was another epic night in the NBA as the Golden State Warriors down by as many as 17. Down by as many as 17 rallied to win over the Portland Trailblazers. Steve Kerr summed it up best in cut one when he said this.
We stole that game. I thought they outplayed us for much of the night, the majority of the night. But, you know, we brought enough competitive fire in the second half to overcome, you know, their great play. And we've been here before. I think our experience helped us. We've done this a few times, we stole it for sure. They outplayed us
for most of the game, but then in the blink of an eye, a 13-0 run in the third brought the Warriors back into it. I tell you what, without Kevin Durant, and now the word is out that this calf injury, is even more serious than they anticipated. He's not going to play in the Western Conference Finals. He's not. I don't know if he's going to be back and ready to go if the Golden State Warriors do what we all anticipate, and that is to play him in the NBA Finals. We'll see. But so far, it's just not going to happen for the guy who was leading the NBA playoffs in scoring. Without him, boy, it sure looks like the Golden State Warriors haven't missed a beat. And Draymond Green talked about leadership, particularly with his sidekicks, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson.
Their leadership was huge. You know, everything was going against us. I guess I was in foul trouble, and, you know, they just kept going. They continued to fight. And, you know, I mean, it was when we needed the most. We was down 17 points there in the third quarter, and we could have folded. But those guys continued to will us on both sides of the ball and, you know, got us back in the game. And, you know, everybody who touched the floor, whether it was from the bench, whether it was starters, everybody was playing hard. And those two guys continued to will us, and, you know, we finally gained some traction and was able to turn the game around.
And Draymond Green is just so good doing all the little things. Loose balls, block shots, steals, screens, rebounds, drives to the bucket. He is some kind of good. Steph Curry, another brilliant night by the greatest shooter I've ever seen. Talked about finding a way to get to 2-0.
Yeah, every game is different. You just got to find a way to win, and that's what we did. So winning plays, everybody contributed. Like the last five that was out there, Klay playing great defense, Looney taking on that one-on-one challenge with CJ, obviously Andre strip at the end, you know, Draymond finding Looney for the lob and finishing at the rim. Everybody, you know, contributed. So very exciting way to win. We got to play better in the first half for sure.
No question about that. But Steph Curry showing that even with Kevin Durant out, they find a way to do it. And Steph Curry leading the way with 37 points on 11 of 22 shooting, 11 of 11 from the free throw line. He hadn't missed a free throw in forever. Klay Thompson with 24, so the two combined for 61 points. Draymond Green 16 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists, 5 blocks. They're just good. Keep those three together, and we will see what happens. Meanwhile, so much talk nationally about, and so foolish, about Zion Williamson. Hey, we're gonna force our hand here. We're going to tell the New Orleans Pelicans we ain't coming. We're not going to do this. We're going to back to Duke because we don't want to play in New Orleans. Or we're going to go to Europe because we don't want to play in New Orleans. Or we're going to force New Orleans to trade us. Really? Seriously? Are you kidding me? You got to be kidding me, because nothing could be further from the truth. And Zion Williamson's stepfather came out and said that, you know, we're not coming back. We're not going back to Duke. Man, we're excited. If the Pelicans want to pick us number one, we're excited to be there. Lee Anderson told a radio station, we're excited about that. Looking forward to meeting with the Pelicans when the time comes. He said, about returning to Duke, there's been a lot of speculation, but that is nothing that we have even considered. Williamson and his family have been in contact with the Pelicans and are planning the next steps with the team. According to Mr. Anderson, I spoke with Coach Gentry the other night, and we met with Mr. Griffin, and then I spoke with him again last night. We had a great conversation. We're excited about the prospects of coming down there, getting settled, looking for a place to stay, all these good things. So the narrative, as Mr. Anderson said, one thing that Zion has always been taught, you accept the things you can't change, you change the things that you can change, and this is one of the things that he had nothing to do with. It's the process of the NBA. All this narrative about the bad things about the city of New Orleans, I'm so tired of hearing it. So tired of hearing it. So good for him. Meanwhile, LSU baseball wins 7-1 last night. And Paul Maneri, as we wrap up our number one, summed up what we know, what he knows, and what he says his players know.
I think the players understand, you know, what's at stake. And, you know, Auburn's still got their top two starting pitchers that they're going to throw at us the next 2 days. So they know the challenge. I mean, it's a nice victory, and I'm glad we got it. And now we need to show that we can play consecutive days in a row. And, you know, if we want to dream of winning a regional, you have to win 3 games in a weekend. If you want to dream of winning a super regional, you got to win 2. You got to be able to put one behind you and get ready for the next day. And I reminded the kids that the score is 0-0. It's not 7-1 starting tomorrow.
No question, no doubt. All right, we'll take a quick timeout. That's kind of a pecking order of things. We'll get into more detail about that. And then around 2:32, Ben McDonald will join us. We'll talk all things LSU baseball. All right, it's Friday. CD is in the house in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com. And we're rolling. Friday. Yes, indeed. We'll be back. Stay with us.
Dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 1037 The Game.
The PGA underway, and Brooks Koepka is continuing as he left off. He was the first round leader, and now he has increased his lead. He is at 10 under par right now, with, you know, a lot of golf left to be played, obviously. But Jordan Spieth shot a 4-under today, and he is next up. He's at 5-under par with Tommy Fleetwood, and Tiger Woods is struggling, to say the very, very least. But this Brooks Koepka guy, he is like, he doesn't do anything during the regular tour, hardly. But when it's major time, this guy is something else. He's something else. My goodness gracious. Something else. Yes, indeed. So we'll keep you up to date on that one. We are presented by DC's Little Capital Exxon I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Got everything you need for your travels. Everything. Get ready to take school's about to be over after next week. And if you're about to take a trip, well, that's a must go to stop. Must, because they've got everything. No matter where you're going, how short, how far, they've got everything. And that True Soul Food Deli tucked away in the corner, the best cheeseburger ever. Dustin Johnson's at 4 under par. Tiger Woods was at plus 2 after the first round. He's about to tee off on the 7th, the par 4, 488-yarder, and he remains at plus 2. He got up to plus 3, had a birdie putt roll in. He is at plus 2. He is 12 shots behind the leader. They anticipate the cut line to be at plus 3. Tiger's going to have to get a little bit better than this. He's going to have to get some birdies rolling and get under par on this thing, or he'll be so far behind that he'll have no shot at this thing. None. So stay tuned for that one. Our phone number, 337-706-0111. 706-0111. So you got the NBA Combine going on with Naz Reid and Tremont Waters. We got the word that Memphis has the number one recruiting class in the country. They've got 7 signees plus the number 2 grad transfer coming in. So that means good news for T. Watford, who is LSU's number one recruit out there, the big power forward from Alabama, and apparently was LSU, Memphis, and Alabama in the hunt for him. There's no way he's going to Memphis with 8 new players involved in that deal. The new coach is, Penny Hardaway, doing a tremendous job of recruiting. Now, they'll be the most scrutinized team in America with all the expectations coming their way. And the NCAA is going to go, you got 7 players, most of them in the top 100 of the high school basketball rankings. Let's do some investigating here. So we shall see. We shall see about that. But the playoffs are good. Milwaukee hosting game number 2 tonight against Toronto. I just don't see how Toronto, as good, as great as Kawhi Leonard is. I mean, Kyle Lowry played the best game of his playoff career, and it wasn't enough. They just don't have enough weapons to hang with the length, the athleticism, and the skill set that Milwaukee has. They just don't. So it's a collision course as far as I'm concerned, Golden State and Milwaukee. Back to Zion Williamson and these national media members. I just don't get it. Don't understand the ignorance. I know they're trying to get clicks and they're trying to get people to get aggravated so they'll listen and they'll do things on social media. All that does is add to their brand. But some of the comments that are being made are just asinine, totally asinine. What are you trying to do to the system that exists? It's always been in play. That's how it works. You get drafted by a team. You sign a contract with that team. You play that contract out. If you don't like where you are, then you can go and move to wherever you want to go, if that is the possibility. But now they want these players to be able to go wherever they want to go. Well, that's not safe. That's not sound. That's not the way it is. And to criticize a team, granted, they did not do enough with Anthony Davis when he was here. Granted. But those people that were calling the shots back then, they're gone. They're gone. It's a whole new environment. And let's see what the new regime can do. Zion Williamson's a teenager. You know, he gets through his first contract, he'll still be in his early 20s. He can go wherever he wants if the Pelicans don't do what's right by him. If they don't show the ability to surround him with the proper talent in order to compete for a championship. If they don't, then he should leave. And that's what Anthony Davis did. And what do you do? So, but people saying the ridiculous things, so, you know, sit out, force your hand, don't go there, go back to Duke, or go to Europe, or tell the Pelicans, I'm not playing for you, trade me. How dare them? Do they see what's happening in Milwaukee? Do they see what happened in Cleveland? Those aren't, you don't have to be in L.A. and New York and Chicago to be significant. If your game is good enough, they'll find you. Madison Avenue, endorsement deals will find you. Zion Williams is going to sign and make more money with a shoe contract, and that's going to be interesting. Is he going to go with Nike after the shoe blow up? Is he going to go with Adidas? Who's he going to go with? Stay tuned. We know he's going to the Pelicans. What pair of shoes is he going to wear? That's what's happening. And what agent's going to sign with? Whoever can get him the most. And I don't blame him. He's coming. Shame on all you national media members that have no clue as to what's going on down here. We're pretty proud of where we are and what we're doing. And we'll show you. We'll talk LSU baseball next with Ben McDonald. This is the Jordy Helfberg Show. 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helfberg Show. Live and local. 1037 The Game.
Boom, 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 boom. All right, welcome back. Fresh off a 7-1 win last night over Auburn to claim game one of this big final regular season SEC series. The LSU Tigers taking on Auburn again tonight, game number two. Our good friend Ben McDonald, the All-American, the Golden Spikes Award winner, and the outstanding broadcaster that he is, kind enough to join us. Ben, Eric Walker, just what the doctor ordered, I think.
Boy, I tell you what, has he been good? You go back and look at his last four or five starts, Jordan, he's really getting it dialed in. He reminds me of the Eric Walker of 2 years ago before he had Tommy John surgery. You know, he knew it would take some time. And, of course, he was elevated into the weekend role this year a little bit sooner than what they wanted to get there because of the injuries to the pitching staff. And the arm felt great, and that ball was coming out of his hand fine, but it just wasn't the same yet. The command wasn't quite there. And, you know, everybody comes back from that surgery just a little bit differently and
right.
Some sooner than others. But, boy, you go back, and Eric Walker, to me, is pitching just as well or better. The changeup is like one of those – you know, Bugs Bunny type changeups you see. I mean, he just throws them time and time again, and guys just can't seem to get it. You know, just you know what he's going to do. You know what the scout report is. You go up there and say, well, he's got a great changeup. I'm going to sit on it. But yet they still can't hit it. So, and the fastball's enough. If they do sit on changeup, he's got enough to get it by. So I'm happy for that young man. And a big win for LSU because we know Friday nights or game ones in the SEC on the weekends has been tough for LSU to win.
I'm sorry for chuckling, but I'm just picturing. I can see Bugs Bunny. I got my eyes closed. I can see Bugs Bunny on the mound and that arm just going around and around and the ball spinning, going loop de loops and all. That's funny stuff. I don't know how that big guy could hit him.
Yeah, I know it. I know it's good stuff. That's what Eric Walker's changeup reminds me of. So I'm happy for that young man. And again, good start for the Tigers. So hopefully. You know what's on the line this weekend, and LSU is obviously in the NCAA tournament. They're obviously in the SEC tournament. They're fighting for a regional host,
yeah.
And I still think they have positioned themselves to do that. I thought when Tuesday came around, they had to win Tuesday, and I really thought they had to win at least two this weekend and win two in the SEC tournament. I felt like that they would definitely be a regional host. That was, I felt like four SEC caliber wins beginning on, you know, this weekend would get LSU in. Whether they sweep this weekend, that would be great. They win the first one on Tuesday, they're in. Or if they only win two this weekend and win two in the SEC tournament, okay, go 2-2, I still think they're in, because I look at the strength of schedule still. LSU's, you know, number six strength of schedule right now. They're 20 in the RPI. So they're in the conversation right now as we speak. And what I really, and you probably dug and looked at this too, though, Jordy. If you look at the top 50 RPI victories in the country, LSU has 18 top 50 RPI victories. There's only three teams in college baseball better than that have more than that. So that speaks volumes for LSU. And they all three happen to be in the SEC. There's going to be teams like Vanderbilt and Mississippi State and Arkansas. You know, and even Georgia, who I think is a national seed too, has the same amount as LSU does at 18 right now.
Ben McDonald, kind enough to join us. LSU versus Auburn, first pitch, 7 o'clock tonight. Pregame show at 6:30. You know, they come up with a big rally in the third, a two-out rally. So, you know, your old coach, the legendary one, Skip Bertman, always talked about timely hitting. 5 consecutive singles, and LSU jumps out ahead 4-1. So that tells me they're not trying to play hero ball. They're just trying to get the ball in play.
Yeah, I think the approach has changed a little bit. And, you know, some guys, you know, it happens with junior year, it happens with sophomore year. You want to see how many home runs you can hit. You want to try to impress the scouts. And I think some guys got out of what they do the best, you know, and that's spray the ball to all fields, you know. And if you'll read the article about Daniel Cabrera, you know, he hurt his wrist. He felt like he was getting out in front of too many balls. He said, you know what, I'm going to go back now that my wrist is healthy, just doing what I do best, and that's spray the baseball around. And we saw him hit a homer Tuesday night to left center fielder. You know, he hit, what, 3 or 4 home runs. Saul Garza has really gotten it going the last, what, 3 or 4 weekends. You know, I think he's hit a home run every weekend. And that was a big boost to me. And you kept talking about earlier in the year that there's nothing at the bottom of the lineup. You know, they couldn't roll it over the top. Yeah. Well, if Garza starts hitting down at the bottom, that's going to help a ton. You know how Hughes and Broussard had good weekends last weekend, you know, and helped out and got some big base hits. Both of them were 4 for 7 last weekend. So all of a sudden the bottom is starting to help produce. You know, the top is always been solid. And, you know, LSU and SEC play, if you just look at the SEC schedule alone, LSU's top 5 offense in the SEC. So it's in the tank. They just got to be a little bit more consistent doing it.
How do you see this pitching set? I mean, every weekend comes and it's a new change. Now, Mikhail Hilliard comes up with an illness or whatever, so Walker pitches game one. You've got Landon Marceau pitching game two and that proverbial TBA for game number three. Have they settled? Where are they in this pitching staff? And have they settled into how they're going to handle their bullpen?
Well, I mean, as far as the rotation goes, I don't see that changing. I mean, I do agree putting Eric Walker at the top. I think he gives you your best chance to win. So why not pitch him, you know, in game ones of series? Okay. Marceau is healthy and he's rolling. I think he's getting better. You know, and it wouldn't surprise me, you know, if the same guy, not Jaden Hill, but Hill just goes back out again on Sunday. You know, I think it may be BA best available at that point.
Okay.
You know? But
yeah, that's a good point.
If he does a pitch. Yeah, if he doesn't pitch, I feel quite sure that he will be. Now, I think there's a scenario where Zach Hess, if he's not used tonight, you may see him start tomorrow. You know, I think that's still a possibility too. Hmm. You know, and so the good news, what we're hearing is Jaden Hill is supposed to be back for the SEC tournament. It appears that he had an outstanding bullpen the other day. Felt great. That was on Tuesday. You know, it sounds like Cole Henry had a really good bullpen the following day. He felt great. Now, it doesn't sound like they're going to be in starting roles because they don't have the workload to hop back in the rotation, but they can come in the SEC tournament, give you an inning or two each time they get on the mound, and that's really going to help boost the back end of the bullpen, because I love the way Peterson is throwing the ball now. Like, he's got a little swagger to him, you know. He finished the game off at Arkansas and was really good those four, and you can see he had a little swagger in him last night too. So I like where he's at. I think Hess will do fine if they pitch him for an inning or two. I don't like Hess going out there for 4 innings at a time. I just think that he just loses some consistency in that third and fourth inning, you know. And so and we got to get Fontenot going. And Fontenot looked a little bit better in his start on Tuesday night. It's just a mechanical issue for him. But, man, you got some horses at the back end of that bullpen. So I think kind of the game plan is, if I can get 4 or 5 innings out of my starter, I got some bullpen guys down here, and I can shorten the game and I can finish the game off with these guys down here. And that's kind of what you saw last night.
we're getting to that interesting part of the season where, man, your depth of pitching becomes very, very important, doesn't it? And does, to your point, does LSU have enough quality depth when you combine everybody, starters, relievers, closers? Do they have enough, you think, if they get right, to make a deep run?
Yeah, I think so, because the more, you know, let's assume that, you know, both Henry and Hill are healthy and they're going to start pitching. You know, they both get some innings in the SEC tournament, and all of a sudden you go to regionals and maybe they give you three innings, maybe they give you three or four innings in the regionals. You know, you happen to get by your regionals and a whole other week goes by. Now all of a sudden they could be potentially starters then, because then they might be able to give you five innings, you see, and you just push everybody around. So that's the good news. The bad news is a young man in Trent Whitmire who really was been really good for LSU this year. You know, he went down over the weekend, and we don't know when he's going to return and how bad it is. So you kind of start to get two arms back, but then you lose an arm too. Yeah. And again, we talked about this. This is the frustrating thing for LSU, is that we still have not, it don't appear that we're going to see this team whole. No. You know, we thought we were going to have in the fall, what we thought we were going to have in the spring before the season started, we're just not going to see it this year, you know. And that's the frustrating thing, I think, for Tiger fans and of course, the coaching staff.
Ben, you've seen the great ones. You've seen Todd Walker and Eddie Furness and so many of the other great hitters that have come through this program. How do you rate Antoine Duplantis and what he's done in his career?
Oh, I rate him right up there with the best of them. I mean, a young man, since day one he stepped on campus, he knew how to hit. He had an idea to hit. And we saw him spray the ball around his first 3 years. I think he got out of his game plan a little bit, tried to pull the ball, and it showed up. I mean, he's got more home runs, obviously 11 home runs now, and by
Amazing.
Far a career high.
Amazing.
Matter of fact, he doubled his career high, you know. And so, but if you hear him talk too, he said, I'm at my best when I'm spraying the ball around. But I like his approach now. He gets behind the count, middle of the count, he'll spray it. Get the count in his favor like he did on Tuesday and even last night, 3-1 count. He'll get the head out a little bit try to bang one, and he can do that now. So, but he's been so consistent, Jordy, a young man that you never hear anything bad about. He plays the game just 100% every time he gets on the field.
Yeah.
And you love that about him, you know. Some people say, well, I wish he was more vocal. Well, not everybody's wired like that, you know. He's just
right.
A silent assassin is what he is. If you go back over his career, he's got more big base hits and I can remember anybody in LSU history. He just comes up, just has a knack to come up with those big base hits. And the RBI sure, as you go back and look, I think he had 60 or 61 a couple years ago. He's got up there, and if LSU makes a run this year, he's going to break the all-time record at LSU, and he'll be 60-something RBIs again.
Can you win a regional and a super regional and get to Omaha without that Ben McDonald, without that Anthony Renato, without that, you know, Paul Byrd, those guys that you know on a Friday that for your chances of winning are significantly higher than if you don't have them. And you know, as good as Eric Walker's pitching now, what is he, 5-4, 6-4 on the year? That's not
right.
A dominating year. It's no disrespect to the kid, but we don't have that Ben McDonald that's going to go get you 11 wins, maybe against one loss with an ERA in the low to upper ones.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with you. If you're talking about getting to Omaha, you know, and I'm not taking anything away from Eric Walker, but he should be your three guy trying to get to Omaha, not your one guy, you know. And Marceau's going to be a good one. I just don't know if he's ready for a deep run. I hope I'm wrong about that. I hope his experience and the little bit of experience he has start to take over a little bit. And Hilliard's got to throw the ball much better. You know, if Hill was healthy and Henry was healthy and let's say, Eric Walker was your three guy. I like that in the super regional matchup in three games, you know. But with the rotation it is right now, I really think you got to hope that you get four or five out of those guys, maybe give up two runs, and then you let the bullpen try to do the rest. And the bullpen's going to have to be really – somebody's got to be really good. Either the starters have to really up their game, or I think the bullpen has to be lights out, and Paul Maneri can go down there and he can grab – you know, Peterson or Hess or Fontenot or somebody down there, and it's just lights out stuff. So the pitching staff is definitely going to have to up their game. There's no doubt about that, because the offense from LSU, while it can be dominating at times, it just has not shown the consistency that you need.
You cover the SEC. You see all these teams. There's only going to be 8 national seeds. How many from the SEC do you anticipate being national seeds?
Well, I mean, Vanderbilt for sure, Mississippi State for sure. I think Arkansas and Georgia are all national seeds. I mean, all four of them are in the top 6 in the RPI. Their strength of schedules are really good. Vanderbilt's at 3, Mississippi State's at 31, Arkansas 15, Georgia 14. So, I mean, I think those guys are in, you know, unless something happens this weekend and they lose two more, they lose two this weekend, they go 0-2 in the SEC tournament, then one of them possibly could fall out. But I just don't see that happen. I mean, now that Georgia gets Emerson Hancock back last weekend, their ace, you know, it's no stopping them. I think they're good enough on the mound to do that. Mississippi State's been very fortunate. Like Vanderbilt, there's no injuries. The starting rotation seems to be really good. The offense is outstanding. So those are four national seeds, no doubt, in my mind right now. I mean, you know, the rest, everybody else has got to fight it out. I mean, LSU, I think, is the next team in line to host a regional. I think Tennessee is 9 in the RPI, which is just outstanding. But they don't have the wins yet, to me, in conference play to deserve to be a host. They're at 13 wins, you know. Now, if they win two this weekend and they sweep Mississippi State, they get to the tournament and they win two or three games in the tournament, then I think all of a sudden they become a regional host too. But I really like where LSU is and where their top 50 wins are right now. I think if they can win two or three and then win a couple in the SEC tournament, there would be postseason baseball in Baton Rouge.
You're a big fan of what Mississippi State's doing. You've talked about them a lot. You've talked about Vanderbilt as well. That seems to be the cream of the crop. Who's the best of the two?
Well, that's a good question. I'll tell you this. Vanderbilt on that AstroTurf at their own place, I don't know how they ever get beat there. You know, it's just it plays right into what they like to do. They hit like 340 at home versus like 290 on the road. Still two really good numbers, but they're so tough to beat at home. And when they get to host everything at home, they're hard to beat, although Mississippi State went in there last year and knocked them off in three games in a super regional, which was just unreal to see that. But I really like Vanderbilt's just a veteran club with four or five seniors, and I really like Kumar Rocker and Drake Fellows leads the SEC and wins. You know, I like their starting rotation. It's got a lot of experience. But, man, don't count Mississippi State out, too. They just – that team – they just, I don't know what it is about them, but it's like
hit.
1 through 9, they can just punish you. And when they're at home, man, it's enough pitching with JT Ginn and Ethan Small on Friday nights. You know, Peyton Plumlee has really come in their Sunday role, and he's really elevated his game. So, and there's plenty of bullpen guys. So I'm going to be honest with you, Jordy. I'll be shocked if Mississippi State and Vanderbilt are both not in Omaha. I would be shocked.
Get away from that turf and get on natural grass. I got to go with Mississippi State. I'm sorry. I just like the way they swing the bat.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I mean, it just seems like to me, top to bottom, they can do it. And Jake Mangum brings something to the table that nobody else in the country does. And he's got some swagger and some confidence. And he just leads that team. He gets up there and he just gets after it. I think everybody kind of falls in line behind him. And look, they got a lot of talent. They got a lot of experience going to Omaha last year. And I wouldn't be shocked at all if they're making that kind of run and playing for a national title.
Just do me a favor. Get your wife off the lawnmower and getting it stuck in the water and the mud. Just get her off of that. And don't make her do that, Ben. Ben, don't make her do that. You get on that thing.
I can't complain too much because she's cutting the grass every now and then, which helps me out. So I was weed eating when she was cutting, and I got a phone call that says, hey, I'm stuck again. I was like, I got a video this time, but she's not going to be happy.
I saw it. Well done, boy. You may be sleeping on the couch tonight, my friend, but that's okay. That's all right. Love you to death.
Hey, Jordan,
you're the
some
best.
Things are just worth it. You know, it was just
I know.
That time, you know.
I understand completely. Don't be surprised when she tosses the keys to you and says, "I'm done. You cut the back 40."
That's right.
There you go.
That's right.
All right, Ben. Have a great weekend, man, and thank you as always. We enjoy it, and we'll see you up in at the SEC baseball tournament next week. Have fun.
Yeah, I'll be there all week, so just holler at me when you get ready to. We'll talk about it.
You got it, my friend. Thank you so much. Ben McDonald, always kind to find some time for us, and we greatly, greatly appreciate it. Again, Game 2, LSU-Auburn, 7 o'clock tonight, first pitch. Pre-game show right here on 103.7 The Game at 6:30. Tigers trying to get to win number 17 in the conference against 12 losses, an inch even closer to a regional host slot. And that is significant. We'll be back to wrap up hour number one next.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
After the hour, wrapping up hour number one, Tiger Woods bogeys again. He's at plus 3. Brooks Koepka, 10 under par, playing in the same threesome along with Francisco Molinari, just pulling away from the crowd. I've got a feeling in my heart of hearts that the XFL is going to be a big hit. A big hit. Bob Stoops gave Mike Leach his big shot as his offensive coordinator when he took over the Oklahoma Sooners 20-something plus years ago. Now Bob Stoops has hired Leach's mentor, Hal Mumme. Hal Mumme as his offensive coordinator in the XFL. Is that going to be fun? Mummy's going to throw it all over the place. He did it at Kentucky. He did it at Southeastern. But that, I think the XFL is going to be a big, big, big hit. I really do. Here's one for you, just in case you thought you'd seen it all. In an unprecedented move in thoroughbred horse racing, Gary West is offering up $20 million of his own money to the owners of Country House, War of Will, Long Range Toddy, and Bode Express if any of those horses finish ahead of his horse, Maximum Security, the next time any of them race against him through December 31st of this year. West believes his offer of $5 million apiece to each of those four horses simply for finishing ahead of Maximum Security would result in record viewership and would generate worldwide interest. If all five horses meet in the same race, it would potentially create the most lucrative race in the world. Gary West, I like it. It's kind of like Mayweather-Pacquiao. Get them together. Let's get a race with all five of these horses in there. 5,000 up across the board for each horse if they beat Maximum Security. And let's race it. Let's race it. Let's do it at the fairgrounds in New Orleans. How about that? Interesting stuff. I like it. I like it. You got the money, go for it. Why not? No harm, no foul. He thinks he's got the best horse out there. Let's do it. Let's do it. I'm all for it. Coming up, hour number two of the program, we'll talk horse racing, specifically the Preakness at Pimlico in Baltimore with Michael Bakeshock of Bakeshock Racing. And George Becknell will join me. We'll talk some NBA playoffs as well. Plus, we start off the hour with Hot Topics. As always, I don't know where CD's taking us today, but we'll figure it out. Brooks Koepka strolling down the fairway, just nonchalant as can be, shows no emotion. All he does is make birdies at major golf championships. Currently at 10 under par, Tommy Fleetwood, four strokes back at 6 under par. So he's just pulling away from the field. If he just keeps playing like this, it's going to be a blowout. We'll see. We'll see. Hour number one's in the books. Brought to you by Hooters. Hooters just makes you happy. Happy hour. It's a Friday. Watch all the ball games. Watch the LSU baseball game. Watch the softball games. They'll have it all on there for you. Yes, indeed. Nothing makes you happier than going to Hooters. Right there on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. Newly renovated. It is first class. Back with hour number two next.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans.
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Hey, hour number two of two on this Friday, May 17th, the year 2019. And away we go. Brooks Koepka at 10 under par, still leading the way by four shots. And round two of the PGA in Long Island at one of the toughest courses in the world. Speaking of golf, the Ole Miss Rebels were trying to get into the NCAA, advance in the NCAA regional. And on one hole, a golfer teed off, hit the ball in the fairway. It rolled off into the first cut of fescue grass when the golfer got to where his ball should have been. He couldn't find it, so no one could find it. So a one-stroke penalty. Hitting three with his next shot, he hit a bird, an actual bird in the air. The ball careened off said bird and into the out-of-bounds area. Another one-stroke penalty. Now hitting five, he ended up hitting a nine, getting a nine on the hole, and fell behind LSU, and the Ole Miss Rebels season comes to an end. Hotty toddy, gosh almighty. Let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, button please.
It's Friday. That means we get you ready for the weekend ahead with five,
one, two, three, four, five
big questions headed into your weekend. Now let's get it going with your Friday 5 edition of Hot Topics.
Well, they did a coroner's report on the bird, and they opened it up. The bird had purple and gold blood, Clint. Whoa, what? What? Good afternoon, my friend.
That is an amazing story, Jordy. And to start things off, we'll have some fun here. You're talking about a golf ball hitting a bird. What was more impressive, that or what Randy Johnson did, pretty much obliterating that bird into a million pieces all those years ago?
That's both of them are terrible. I will go with the golfer. Hopefully the bird was not quite as devastated structurally as the other one was. So yeah.
But still, it was definitely rough. And we're talking about golf. My goodness. Brooks Koepka possibly just made Bethpage Black just an absolute – put an absolute
so
clinic
far.
On that one.
So far,
well, yeah. I'm talking about the first round, Jordy.
Yeah.
The course record, 63, I believe, what was it, seven under par
yeah.
After day one. That was nothing short of impressive, Jordy. It just makes me think that Brooks Koepka, hands down, has to be the best all-around golfer in the world. He was able to do that on that kind of course with the legendary kind of implication that thing has.
Killer Koepka, absolutely. And he's picked off right where he's left off. He's 10 under par now. He's got a four-stroke advantage as we speak. And Tiger Woods is in the fescue yet again at plus two, 12 strokes behind. It's not even close.
Oh, it's not even close, and it's definitely going to be an entertaining next couple of days to see who's going to wind up coming away with the PGA Championship. Right now, it seems like Brooks Koepka is about to run away with this thing wire to wire.
So far, yeah.
And now we got to move over to the XFL. You talked about it at the end of the hour, Jordy. I absolutely love the fact that you brought it up. But Bob Stoops, big game Bob, getting the band back together, if you will, with the architect of the air raid, meaning we'll be seeing some Big 12 offense in Dallas, Texas, and I am honestly loving it.
Hal Mumme, he's going to have that towel wrapped around his neck, and he's going to – you might as well – if you're a running back, forget it. If you're a wide receiver, you're loving it. If you're the quarterback, you just pray that your offensive line can give you time because they're going to be throwing it all over the joint. Hal Mumme, back in the fray.
And he's going to have a good look at a lot of those players – starting on June the 7th, they're going to have a combine in Dallas, Texas, the first of eight summer showcases that just got announced a few hours ago. We're going to kind of show your craft here, Jordy.
Yeah.
And you can about imagine a lot of these AAF rejects are going to be trying to get in on this action.
Yes, indeed.
I would love to see Zach Mettenberger in that air raid offense.
Absolutely.
That would be amazing.
Don't forget what this is all about now.
Oh, yeah.
This is a calculated move by Bob Stoops. He wants to go from the XFL in Dallas to Jerry's World and the Cowboys in the NFL.
Yep.
I'm telling you, watch out, Mr. Garrett. You're on thin ice.
Oh, he's been – I think he stays on thin ice, Jordy, because the man has just, like, been on the cusp of getting fired, but somehow, some way, he manages to keep the job that he has. I don't know
Didn't the Cowboys win a Super Bowl with a former Oklahoma head coach? At one time?
If I'm not mistaken, that sounds
Mr. Barry Switzer? Yeah.
Barry Switzer.
Okay. Big game, Bob. Look out.
I think that definitely would be huge for that franchise going forward. And I'm interested in this, Jordy. NFL.com's Adam Schein put this out earlier today about the NFL's most complete teams. And I want you to take a wild guess where he has the New Orleans Saints at.
The most complete teams?
Yes.
I would be stunned if they're lower than three.
Oh, they're much lower than three, Jordy.
Really?
They're number seven.
Oh, he's a – who is this guy?
Adam Schein.
Who is this guy?
NFL.com.
Oh, that doesn't mean nothing. They ever played the game? that means nothing. NFL.com. Okay. Whatever.
Yeah.
Like who's he got ahead of him? Who's ahead of him?
All right, Jordy, for what it's worth, we'll go from number one on down. Number one, the Los Angeles Chargers. I'm surprised at that.
Throw up.
The Rams. The Browns.
Okay.
There's that. You know, you got probably one of the best offenses in all of the league right now. Jeez. The Indianapolis Colts, the Kansas City Chiefs, okay. And then right above the Saints, you're talking about the Cowboys a lot in this segment, Jordy. Yeah. It's Dallas at number six.
Oh, my God. Okay. This whoever this is with NFL.com has lost any and all credibility with me. Sorry. Goodbye.
All right, Jordy. Jeez. We're gonna step away from that. And my goodness, Jordy. What a performance last night from LSU. Eric Walker, six solid innings, only allowing two hits. Twanee going off yet again, hitting a big home run. My goodness, this team's hitting at the right time. But my question to you is, Jordy, if they wind up sweeping the series hypothetically in the SEC tournament, how many games would they have to win to kind of really solidify themselves as a regional host, in your mind?
I'm going to go with what Ben McDonald had to say, because he knows a lot more about it than me. Any combination of four wins. So if you sweep Auburn, you win one in the SEC tournament, you host a regional. And just do the math from there. So just depends on how they do it tonight and on Saturday. If they win one out of the two, then they got to win two in the SEC tournament at Hoover. So who am I to doubt him? He covers it like nobody else, so I'll agree with him.
All right, Jordy, last one, and we kind of know where this is going, Jordy, because what's going on this Sunday night?
The season, the finale of all finales.
The last one, Jordy.
The last one. Are you going with the Nick Saban prediction?
I'll stick with Nick Saban prediction because I haven't watched an episode. So, Jordy, who's going to be sitting on the Iron Throne when it's all said and done? Or is nobody going to be sitting on the Iron Throne?
No, somebody has to sit on it. And I'm going with I agree with Nick. I just think that the Dragon Queen showed a side of her that people couldn't believe. So I'm going to go with Jon Snow on the Iron Throne. There's your Hot Topics. Brought to you by the best hot sauce, Cajun Chef. Bring a small bottle with you wherever you go because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. Back, horse racing.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Hulford Show on 103.7 The Game.
Now the race is on and here comes pride at the backstretch. Heartaches are going to the inside. My tears are holding back.
Welcome back. There won't be a Triple Crown winner in 2019. It's been a crazy month in horse racing. But tomorrow, the Preakness Stakes is set to go off at Pimlico Racecourse in Baltimore with a 5:50 our time call to the post. There'll be no Kentucky Derby winner. It's the first in the race. It's the first time since 1996. When Grindstone was retired due to injury, that the Preakness won't feature the winner from the first leg of the Triple Crown. So we bring in our thoroughbred horse racing expert and analyst extraordinaire of Bakechock Racing, and that is Michael Bakechock. So, Michael, I love horse racing, but I'm sell me on this race, my friend, please, and good afternoon.
I'll try to tell you. It's interesting that, you know, we had talked about and referenced Grindstone being the first, the last time a Louisiana Derby horse won the Kentucky Derby.
Yes.
And, you know, that's also the last time, as you pointed out, that the Derby winner did not go on to run in the Preakness. Before that, it was 1985 when Spendabuck won the Derby, but decided to pass on the Preakness because a track, I believe it was Garden State Park, I don't think they run anymore, had offered $1 million bonus if you won the Jersey Derby and the Kentucky Derby. So he passed and went for the money, and he got the money. And then just one other real quick stat.
Yeah, I'm not, love it. Take your time.
This is not selling you on the Preakness, but this is the first time since 1951 that the first four finishers of the Derby any of the first four have not gone on to run in the Preakness. So it's really extraordinary in terms of just seeing, you know, we got new horses. I mean, this never happens. And look, they're running for a lot of money. I mean, they got a million something bucks on the line, and those first four just decided not to come in and do it. So it's kind of extraordinary. However, so, that means,
value, right? You always talk about value.
The race is wide open, and if you like somebody, you know, you're likely, and you're right, you're likely to get paid pretty good.
See, so the layman out there, there's nine horses that didn't run in the Derby in the Preakness lineup. So, man, you got to go to the racing form and study up a little bit to get on this thing, right?
Well, you do. But as we know, we've talked about in previous years, the quote-unquote new shooters, as they call them, don't do very well in the Preakness against the Derby run horses. And that's, you know, likely due to the fact that the Derby horses have just run a pretty, you know, grueling race, and they're probably in top shape and top form, mm-hmm. and these other horses that, you know, weren't good enough usually to run in the Derby. So there's even the question of, you know, are they actually in the same league as the Derby horses? So, but you're right. They got nine new ones and, what is it, four other ones and four Derby horses. So, I mean, the first place to start, Jordy, is usually – look at the Derby horses and see which ones of those, you know, make the most sense in terms of the Preakness. So that's usually where I'm starting my handicap.
So do we start with Improbable, Bob Baffert's horse? He's trying to win the Preakness Stakes, and that would break a tie with Robert Wyndham Walden, who won this Triple Crown race seven times late in the 19th century. So do we start with Improbable?
Sure, we start with him because he's likely to be the favorite. And as Bob Baffert himself pointed out, and this is, again, one of these crazy facts, but he hasn't won a race this year. So he's going to be the favorite in the Preakness, and he's 0-3. Now, he's won three, you know, really competitive races. He ran fifth in the Kentucky Derby. But his race in the Derby, he was in a great position. He had a really good trip against, you know, 19 other horses, but he didn't fire, you know. And so mm-hmm. I'm going to take a second and third look at him because he sure should have run better than he did. But Bob Baffert is, as you said, he's won the Preakness more than any other modern-day trainer. And if he thinks he can win, then, you know, I'm going to respect that. But he's going to be the favorite in a race that probably – you can look elsewhere for value. The other horse that, you know, people heard a lot about from the Derby is War of Will, because that's the horse that Maximum Security fouled in the Derby, and that's the horse that, you know, caused or was the cause of Maximum Security's disqualification. So he, again, breaks from the one post, and unlike the Derby, the one post at the Preakness is pretty darn good, so there shouldn't really be much disadvantage to that. He'll probably be the second favorite, possibly. You know, he's 4-1 on the morning line. Tyler Gaffney returns to ride. And look, he certainly looked like he was going to do something more than what he ended up doing after he got fouled, according to the stewards. And by the way, Jordy, they've handed Luis Saez, the jockey of Maximum Security, a 15-day suspension.
That was my next question. That seems so outlandish and absurd to me. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's, you know, let's get past whether you think the disqualification was warranted or not.
Correct.
You know, it's some people say yes, some people say no. So, but the suspension of the jockey, to me, is absolutely egregious and just an overstatement of the power of the stewards. My point on that is, if they really thought that it was a deserving foul, and so, you know, 15 days is a lot of suspension for a jockey. That's 15 racing days. Where the heck was the inquiry sign right after the race? I mean, if they really thought that it was, you know, a bad enough foul to give a jockey days, why didn't they immediately post it after the race? The other point is, it sure looked like to me that it was the horse that caused the foul, not the jockey. You know, you're running 30 miles an hour on a, you know, 1,200-pound horse, and he's getting tired. And it sure looks like to me that the jockey was doing everything he possibly could to keep the horse in a straight path. And that, I think it was, I don't know what it was, Jordy. I'm racking my brain trying to figure out what those stewards are thinking. You know, it's like trying to figure out what the referees in an NBA or NCAA game are thinking when they make a bad call. It's just, you can't get into their head. So, but that seemed to me to be a bit, not only a bit much, there should be no suspension at all, in my opinion, of Luis Saez.
Michael Bakeshock, you can follow him at Bakeshock Racing, the 2012 National Handicapping Champion, the Eclipse Award winner. You can get all his picks on Brisnet, Brisnet. A side note on this race, is this going to be the end at Pimlico Park? I saw where they had to close almost 7,000 seats last month that were deemed unsafe for use. What the heck's happened to Pimlico?
It's complicated. Well, Pimlico itself, the physical structure is, to put it as mildly as I can,
it's terrible.
A dump.
Yes.
It's awful.
Yes.
I mean, it is a fire. I'm surprised it's not been deemed a fire hazard because it's all wooden. You know, a few years ago, they lost power and they lost plumbing, and it was just a disaster for one of the country's most prestigious races. And then there's a battle going on now between the track owner who wants to move it to another track that they own in Maryland and the city of Baltimore. So, you know, I think maybe the condemnation was maybe a play by one of the two to kind of make a point. There's a lawsuit over, can you move it? Is it Pimlico or is it the city of Baltimore's? I don't know. It's a mess, but the track itself, the structure itself is awful. Yeah,
all right.
It's awful.
All right, let's get to the race itself. You said it's a wide open field. Is there a lot of speed in this field? And what are you looking for? What do you think wins this thing? Not who, but what kind of race wins this thing?
I think that there seems to be a more abundance of speed than there was in the Derby. There's not as many horses, of course. But I do think that it's going to set up, to me, for a horse that's going to come from behind. And then also, you know, using just statistics, you know, the new shooters don't normally do well. So I'm going to be looking for a horse that was in the Derby that kind of fits the profile of a closer and also a Derby horse. And, you know, that horse to me is win, win, win. Okay. He's going to be a longer shot. He ran in the Derby. He split the field. He might not have liked the track. You know, the race before in the Bluegrass, he was the only horse that was actually closing. So, look, I'm definitely taking a really extreme value position here and saying that I just don't want to bet on any horse that's probably 6 or 8 to 1. I just don't think I don't see how any horse can be that price in this field. So, you know, that eliminates a few. That eliminates War Will, you know, eliminates Improbable for me. And so then I'm just going to look elsewhere. And I don't think this horse has really done anything, you know, kind of wrong. If you give him excuses in his last two, then, you know, he kind of fits it 10, 12, maybe 15 to 1.
All right. All right. There you go. I'm going to watch it because I love horse racing. But I know there's a lot of people out there going, man, the heck with this thing. A strange, weird month of horse racing. My gosh. The lawsuit, the suspension of the jockey, the disqualification. It's crazy. But it's kept you busy, so that's good.
It has, and I don't want to say it, but horse racing, just when you think it's crazy, it gets crazier. So I hope nothing even crazier happens, but it's horse racing, so it is possible that something can happen weird. Even more weirder than what has been going on tomorrow in Baltimore.
Michael Bakeshock, BakeshockRacing.com. Go to Brisnet.com for all the winners. Have fun, my friend. Always fun talking to you, buddy. Take care.
Thank you, Jordy. Appreciate it.
All right, you're welcome. Michael Baychok will take a time out here. We'll come back with more. Friday edition, the Jordy Helfberg Show. 103.7 The Game. 103.7thegame.com. Did he say win, win, win? All I want to do is win, 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 no matter what. Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Okay, got it. We'll be right.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. It's Friday. Every day's a great day at Hooters. Fridays especially. Happy hour going on as we speak. It's a wonderful time right there on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. Wings, sports, and so much more. Hooters just makes you happy. You know what makes me happy? When I get to talk with my buddy George Becknell. We never plan what we're going to talk about. We just kind of talk and knock it around a little bit. My George, how the heck are you today, my friend?
Jordy, I'm fantastic, brother. How are you?
I'm good. We got to go back to the NBA draft lottery and the 6% chance, and the Pelicans go ahead and win it. So take me back, your emotions, and now that they have, maybe they have calmed down a little bit, your thoughts on what a historic night for that organization.
Well, Jordy, I was kind of hoping the Pelicans would get a top five pick, preferably a top three, you know. But when I saw Memphis get the second pick, I was like, oh, I can't believe this just happened. You know, I'm so excited because, you know, I spent a lot of time in the Smoothie King Center last year. I saw the fans went, you know, reaction to Anthony Davis after he asked for a trade. And I'm just so excited for this fan base because now they have an exciting player, a big name to look forward to, and just to get excited for Pelicans basketball. But now that the dust has settled a little bit, and I'm thinking about the Pelicans basketball team as is, even I'm not expecting David Griffin to be able to convince Andrew Davis to stay.
Okay.
But if you talk about, you know, Alfred Payton, Drew Holiday, Zion, you talk about Julius Randle, there's some good pieces on this Pelicans basketball team, and you already know you're going to get some good value for Andrew Davis. So I feel like this is a playoff basketball team as constructed. They don't need that much. So I'm actually very excited for the season. Because, you know, let's say you do a deal with Boston. I mean, I don't think you could do a deal for Anthony Davis and not get Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Or if you do a deal with the Lakers, you gotta get somebody like Kuzma or Ingram, you know. And the Pelicans have been a three away from being a good basketball team for a very long time. So, you know, the addition of Zion, Julius Randle, I'm very, very optimistic for the Pelicans in the West. And I think the West is very top-heavy, especially not knowing what's going to happen with Kevin Durant. I'm excited for what this team could do next year, Jordan. Very.
Yeah. I think you got to get two starters out of the trade, personally. I think anything short of that is a travesty. So I guess the question is, do the New York Knicks have enough with that third pick and what they have in their lineup to entice you to go to the Knicks, or at pick number four, the Lakers with, you know, nothing else has changed other than the pick itself from the players that they had offered earlier in this Anthony Davis saga?
Well, me personally, I like the Lakers pick more than the Knicks for the simple fact that other than the pick itself, the Lakers have more to offer. Like, some of those guys could come in and play now. There's not a whole lot of guys in New York that I feel very, very confident in to come in and fit with this Pelicans basketball team. Ideally, I think the Pelicans need to get, like you said, two starters or two guys contributing in a major way. But one of those guys has to be a three. They have to come in and play the wing, be a solid defender, but somebody you can throw the ball to and get a bucket and who can knock down some outside shots. You have to get that guy in the deal. And I don't really see that guy in New York, but there's a couple possibilities in L.A. But, you know, I guess we'll see. But I would prefer the Lakers pick.
I'm curious to see what the Celtics offer. I'm wondering if there's another team out there that that we're not even thinking of that's going, you know what, it's got to be somebody. Because Anthony Davis is one of those rarities. There's got to be somebody else that's going, hey, you know, if we put this and this and this together, we can get that, and here we go. So maybe a Portland comes into play. Who knows? Who knows?
What do you feel about Phoenix? Devin Booker and maybe some other assets, because I read that this morning.
That's possible. That, you know, I can't imagine. Well, you know, Monty Williams has ties with Anthony Davis. I don't know. What do you get? Booker and Ayton for Anthony Davis? Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
I think.
Absolutely. Sure. Now you go with the lineup of Elfrid Payton, Jrue Holiday, Devin Booker, Zion Williamson, and DeAndre Ayton. That interests me. Because today's game, you better have some shooters, man. We see it throughout the course of the playoffs. If you don't have shooters that can knock down the three ball, you can't win. You just can't.
You can't at all. And look, Julius Randle, sixth man of the year, in my opinion, if they do that.
Yeah.
I'm really liking that idea.
Well, we shall see. We shall see. But it's nice to have some cards in your hand, you know what I mean, where it earlier – earlier you felt like, man, the Pelicans are losing leverage here. Then all of a sudden they get that first pick, and now, holy cow, now they're holding pocket aces. And you come to me, and how bad do you want them? Because we don't have to trade them. We can keep them for a while. I don't think that's going to happen. Do you? I don't. A deal's going to be made.
Well, at worst case scenario, you want to get him out of there because you want to rebuild the franchise. And the worst thing that can happen is you let him walk in free agency. So maybe if you want to give him a trial run and see how it goes and treat him before the deadline, possibly. But I'd like to start fresh, especially since you got a red talent like Zion coming in.
Nazari, Tremont Waters are at the NBA Combine. We're talking with George Becknell. And Naz said, no $300,000 deal offer to me. Yeah, that's baloney. That's not what I'm about. No, I came to LSU because I love the coaches. I love the family concept. I love the city. I know, by the way, my girlfriend was there as well. You buying into that? You buying into all that?
I'm buying into the only thing I'm buying into is the $300,000 contract part. You know, you talk about going to play professional basketball. You want at least $1 million. You know, I don't think that's the only thing I'm buying. But other than that, man, I don't buy the rest of that, Jordy, to be honest with you. I don't know if he's ready yet for the NBA, but I guess we'll see.
Well, you know, they draft on potential, so he's gonna learn what the G League is all about. He might get that contract that, you know, guarantees you X amount of days up with the big club and the rest of the days down in the farm club kind of a system in the G League. So we'll see. Tremont Waters, with shoes on, they list him at 5'11". Without, he's really, really small. Got a real small wingspan, comparable to that. But got a 40-inch vertical, and he's pretty darn fast. He ran the second quickest baseline to three-quarter court at the Combine. I think he makes it with somebody, but it's got to be the right team. What do you think?
I agree. It has to be the right team. We see guys, you know, Allen Iverson was listed at 6 feet, but there's no way Allen Iverson 6 feet, right? You got guys like Earl Boykins that played a long time. Even Muggsy Bogues, Floyd Webb, and those guys. You know, Tremont Waters is very, very quick. He has a lot of potential. He has a big upside. I think he makes a roster. Now, I don't think he's going to be one of those guys in the main rotation. I don't think he's going to play a lot of minutes. But I think he could come in and contribute, and especially in case of an injury, he's sufficient. Like he can come in and contribute. So I think he makes a team. I think he makes a team before Naz Reid does, but I think Reid might have that more. He might have that staying power in NBA a little bit more because of, like you say, his upside, how long he is, his athleticism. He'll be able to stay around longer. But I think Tremont Waters get more playing time.
I'm with you, my buddy George Becknell. You saw what Memphis has done in basketball recruiting. They've got the number one recruiting class in the country. They got seven top flight recruits. Seven. How the heck you do that?
I got two words for you. Penny Hardaway. Jeez. You know, you got a guy like Penny Hardaway as head coach, Jordan. You know, Penny is a guy who he was like the new Magic Johnson. You remember Penny Hardaway? Had Penny Hardaway not gotten hurt, we'd be talking about this guy like an all-time great. But also something that people don't realize: Penny has one of the most famous sneakers called the Foamposite that ever came out in the 90s. And a lot of these young kids, they see Penny, they see the sneakers, they see them being able to do that. That's a major factor in recruiting now. Like, you look at football, you see the Jordan logo on football jerseys now. Why? It's all about recruiting. So this doesn't surprise me at all. You can come down there, you can play with a guy like Penny Hardaway. You know, he's big in his community because that's where he went to school. He has the cool shoes. Makes all the sense in the world to me. So I'm not shocked at all.
They got seven of the top recruits. Plus, they got a Little Rock grad transfer who is ranked number two in the transfer ranking. So that's got eight players. The good news is that five-star forward Trendon Watford, who many said it's down to LSU, Alabama, and Memphis, with eight new players, Watford's not going to Memphis. So on Monday, maybe, just maybe, Will Wade and company will announce that they got the 19th-ranked player in the country coming to LSU, and that would be terrific.
Yeah, I think LSU is a good place to come play college basketball. I mean, you know, we might be a little biased, but, you know, especially you, you said you played there. But think about it. Will Wade, other than all that craziness that we had going on last year, before that, LSU had a very, very good season. Will Wade has proven himself to be a very good basketball coach. He's got a lot of good guys, a lot of key recruits there. LSU's program is on the rise, and we can keep that momentum. So that's a good place to come play basketball. So I like LSU fans to land this guy.
Birch Koepka is had a great opening round at the PGA. Jordan Spieth had a great second round, and Tiger Woods started the day at plus two. Does Tiger make the cut at the PGA?
Jordan, I'm on board. I've been waiting for Tiger to come back for a long time, and I'm still on Tiger Woods' high for him winning the Masters. So I'm going to go with yes. I think Tiger's back. I think he's going to make the cut. And I can't wait to see if he does or not. But I'm taking Tiger all the way.
All right. What do you think the Golden State Warriors are thinking deep in their heart? I mean, no Kevin Durant, and they seem to be playing great. I mean, you see the greatness of Steph Curry. You see Klay Thompson elevate his game. How good has Draymond Green played? Is there any direct relation to not having Durant, or are these players just saying, hey, we don't have him, we got to step up our game? Do you think they really want Durant back?
Well, the thing about it is, you know, you can't not want a guy like Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant's a special player. You know, he might be the best player in the NBA right now, so I think you always want him. But all those guys have egos, right? They were champions before Kevin Durant got there. So what they're doing, they're just kind of having that opportunity right now to flex their muscles and say, hey, look, I know Kevin's out, but look, we're champions. You know, it's a blessing, a major blessing to have your second option to be the first unanimous MVP in NBA history as the second option.
As your second option.
And the other guys are all-stars. So, I mean, you just see these guys continue to do what they've been doing since Steve Kerr got to Golden State. They're just flexing their muscles. They're a very good basketball team without Kevin Durant, even though they're a little thinner. But you see them, they have more of a system now. They have more of a flow without Kevin Durant.
I love it.
They're getting their bench players involved, too. Because if you look at their Houston series, the bench gave them nothing when Kevin Durant was healthy. The second Kevin Durant goes out, now all of a sudden you're getting 20, 25 points out your bench. And you see the ball moving around, and you see a lot more open shots. So I think their attitude is, hey, Kevin Durant, come back. But if you don't, we're going to be just fine in Golden State.
How about, although he is an unrestricted free agent, how about we do a swap? Anthony Davis to Golden State for Kevin Durant in New Orleans. Would you take that deal?
Would I? I would be like, look, hurry up before you change your mind. Look, get Kevin Durant to do a sign and trade. We'll pay him whatever we got to pay him. Because to me, Kevin Durant is what the Pelicans have been missing. You know, you get a guy, think about it. The three has been the weakest position since
forever.
I don't know. Like, I can't even think of a
forever.
Jokic might be the best three that we've had in years.
Forever.
You know, and think about it. So you get a guy, Kevin Durant, who's 7 foot, who can shoot from like 35 feet from the basket.
Look at you getting all excited. Listen to your adrenaline build up now, just over the thought of something that has absolutely no chance of happening. But listen to you getting fired up.
I'm just saying, Anthony Davis for Kevin Durant. That sounds like I take that trade up, straight up.
I mean, you think Anthony Davis wants to play with LeBron, or do you think he wants to play with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green? Please.
I mean, I tell you what, he's not going to win anything with LeBron. LeBron's done winning rings. I don't, you know, I hate to disappoint all these LeBron fans. LeBron is over. LeBron's going to retire as a 3-time champion. I'm sorry. It's not happening.
Anthony Davis for Klay Thompson and the center, Looney. Would you do that one?
Yeah, I would. Why not?
Okay, I would.
You know, because Klay is another guy who can kind of come in that role. He's a good defender. He's one of the best shooters I've ever seen. I'll take it.
He's a great shooter, but he ain't even close to Steph Curry. I'm sorry. He's not even close.
But Jordan, look, Steph Curry's
ridiculous.
How many people are close to Steph Curry?
Nobody.
Like this
Nobody.
Played.
Nobody. All right. We'll see. Collision course, right? Warriors, Bucks. I mean,
I think these
things could be 5 games max, I think.
Yeah. I mean, look, Kawhi Leonard is an amazing player. Like, he's shown me so much in this playoffs. Like, I already thought he was a great player. But he's top 5 player on earth right now. It's just, if you take Kawhi Leonard off the Raptors, you take Giannis off the Bucks. The Bucks sweep the Raptors. It's not even close. The only reason why they might win a game or two is because Kawhi is that good. But the rest of the team, not a shot. Yeah, so I like
the
Bucks.
I like the Bucks and I like the Warriors. And I'm going to tell you what, that would be with the length of the Bucks. That's an interesting series. We'll be watching. I guarantee you that. All right, my friend. Enjoy the weekend. And thanks for the time. Always fun talking with you.
Hey, the pleasure's always mine. Now I might have to go get some of those Daytona wings from Hooters since you got it on my mind.
There you go. And Hooters just makes you happy. Thank you, sir. Take care, George.
All right, now.
We'll take a timeout. We'll come back and close things up on this Friday, May 17th. The Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station. And your source for LSU sports, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local, 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back as we wrap up the week here on the Jordy Hultberg Show. It's been a fun week. Lots of really good guests. Lots of interesting topics to say the very, very least. Don't forget about LSU baseball tonight here on 103.7 The Game. Pre-game show 6:30. First pitch at 7 o'clock. Landon Marceau on the mound for LSU. The Tigers are 33-21 overall, 16-12 in the SEC, and they honestly moved one step closer to hosting an NCAA regional in Baton Rouge. Coming up shortly, we'll have LSU softball from Tiger Park as they will take on Monmouth at 4:30, and we'll see how that comes along as well. So stay tuned for that. Plus, we got the Raging Cajuns in baseball, the Raging Cajuns in softball. It's a busy, busy, busy time, to say the very, very least. All right, let's go to our daily history lesson. It was on this day, May 17th, the year 1993. He had done it once before against the Cleveland Cavaliers over Craig Helo, but on this day in 1993, Michael Jordan hit the game-winning, series-clinching shot to sweep the Cavaliers and once again advance to the Eastern Conference Finals. MJ, just a dagger in the heart of Cleveland Cavalier fans. Really good Cav teams. I mean, really good teams. But they just couldn't get past his airness. Michael Jordan, the game winner to eliminate the Cavs on this day, May 17th, the year 1993. Today is your birthday, and happy birthday from all of us to all of you. Hope you have a great day with cake and ice cream and maybe a present or two. That'd be nice. That would be very nice. Let's see who you share it with. Well, I'm sorry to say it, but you share it with Matty Ice. Sorry, but Matt Ryan of the Atlanta Falcons is 34 years old today. And the Saints are to Matt Ryan what MJ was to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Sorry, Dirty Birds, we got your number. We got your number. And one of the legendary San Antonio Spurs, Tony Parker, is 39 years old today. What a great player he was. Part of that triumvirate. Timmy Duncan, Manu Ginobili, Tony Parker. They won some titles for Greg Popovich and the San Antonio Spurs. So, there you have that. If it's your anniversary, hey, have a great one. Keep adding year after year after year to it. So, coming up Monday, we'll know who won the Preakness. We'll know where the NBA playoffs stand. We'll know about the softball situation for both the Tigers and the Raging Cajuns. And we'll see if LSU has inched a little bit closer to a regional hosting position and where they will be playing in the SEC tournament. So all that and more coming your way on Monday. Special thanks to Ben McDonald, Michael Baychak, George Becknell, and, of course, the one and only incomparable CD Clint Domain. Thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks to our partners for making it possible. Have a great Friday and even better weekend. Come on back Monday, same time, 2 to 4, same station, 103.7 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.